We are back. You are tuned in to Welcome to Neo Soulville with me, Tanya Dyson, here on WYXR 91.7 FM. And as promised, I have DJ House Shoes in the studio with me. So let me do the proper introduction. Today on Welcome to Neo Soulville, I'm joined by DJ, producer, and true ambassador of Detroit's rich musical legacy, known for championing the work of J Dilla and pushing the boundaries of hip-hop culture worldwide. He's here in Memphis ahead of his set at Central Station tonight. Welcome to the show, DJ House Shoes. I feel like
you.
I wrote that really well. I was like, I got to say this because I put some umph into that.
Fantastic.
So how are you doing today?
I'm good.
First time in Memphis?
First time in Memphis proper, yep. I'm
okay.
Grateful to be here. Chad's been putting me up on the history, and it's a lot of incredible stories he's been telling me.
Yes. And so, yeah, we're definitely going to dig into that, and definitely got a list of places that we got working for you to pop in, you know, because it's just so much to see here. You know, Memphis truly is a musical city. And, you know, coming from Detroit, you know, Detroit
Absolutely.
Is very ingrained in music,
right?
From the visual art to everything,
oh, yeah.
The murals and
a lot of culture. Absolutely.
Lots of culture and just so much musical history. Every time I go there, I seem to learn something new, you know, about it, because Motown gets pushed a lot, but Detroit is way bigger.
Oh, absolutely.
Much more than Motown.
Yeah, definitely.
And you realize that.
It goes,
you know?
Definitely.
Yeah, so let's talk about you, you know, as your career. So can you share your journey into DJing and what initially inspired you to pursue?
I've always been a music lover since I was a child, a little one. My parents split when I was young, and I would go to my father's on the weekend, and one of the things we would always do is go to the record store. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And both my mother and my father were definitely very music-minded. I would come home from school. My mother would be playing anything from, you know, Frank Sinatra to Stevie to Steely Dan to Miles to Take Six. So it was just in me, you know what I mean? And I went to college for a very, very brief moment. When I was in high school and middle school, I liked to always get everything first.
Right.
Like, I had a little calendar with releases. I had the next 6 months mapped out, and you know, I would just spread it to the homies. When college didn't work out, took the balance of you know, the money that was left, and basically spent all of it on records over the course of maybe 3 or 4 months. And luckily enough, got hired at St. Andrew's Hall in April of 94, and was blessed to be able to kind of curate the ears of the city of our hip hop community. And then I worked at the record shops too, so you could come hear me playing the new joints on a Friday and come and cop them on Saturday. You know what I mean?
Right. So that's super dope. You know, of course, before we went on the air, we kind of were talking about, you know, just Detroit and knowing a few of the same people. And,
right.
You know, again, those musical roots that came into play, you know,
right.
With you. So any specific, I guess, you said one record shop. There was one that I visited and someone's like, I think Dunny Simpson's mom. It was some story someone told me. It's like, this record shop was owned by this. And
okay.
I went by a place that had mixtapes, like still had mixtapes.
Right.
And like
wow.
Some old stuff. And it's crazy. I need to remember what street that was. I remember it like when I'm completely away from you. That's usually how my brain works.
Right.
But the Detroit musical legacy, how as a producer, how has that shaped you as far as wanting to borrow from those sounds and those many eclectic sounds, and then also mixing that with exploring new sounds?
Well, it's just always about quality. You know what I mean? I never wanted to kind of fit in to, you know, you got regular folk that just kind of take what they're given.
Right.
And I always wanted to push boundaries. You know what I mean? I always wanted to break new music, break new artists. I mean, I was the first person to play JD publicly, and
right.
I was cramming it down people's throats, and now everybody wants to act like, you know,
right.
I love JD, and it's like, you were mad I wasn't playing your record though.
Right.
I would tell people back in the day, you know, I could be a very aggressive person in conversations. I'm doing better these days, but you know, I'd be like, hey man, just get a beat from Jay. I guarantee you, I'll at least play the instrumental.
It's like, look, you ask me how I will play your music, and that's how I play your
right,
music.
Right, but it was just about building relationships, because these are, you know, there's a finite amount of records.
Right.
And back in the day, it's not like you're getting an email blast. There might only be one copy of that test press in the city.
Right.
So you got to have all these people at all these different shops on deck. And I'm just grateful that everybody really was kind of enamored by me, because I was, you know, this little white kid that lived outside of Detroit, and they just saw my heart, and I'm super grateful for it.
Right. You know what I mean? So you've often been called a champion of J. Dilla's legacy.
Yeah.
And how did you two first connect, and what was it like working alongside him?
I was working at Street Corner Music. Shout out to Chris and Mike. Mm-hmm. I got hired in April of 94, and I met Jay that fall. You know, he was a young cat, dressed fresh, came in, and it was just something special. You could just feel it. Like, he was digging for records, and we had a little listening station in the back, and I remember the headphones were like an instrument of torture. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Old, really jagged headphones.
Right.
And he would listen to a record, and you could see him kind of zone out. And he would take the headphones off and just kind of start beatboxing a drum pattern. And unbeknownst to me, I would soon find out, not that far after that, that the beat was already done. Like, the beat's done in his head.
Wow.
And it was just a matter of executing it on the pads. And that's what really separated him from others. You know, I've heard stories from Pete Rock where he would have dreams about making beats, and he would get frustrated that he couldn't find the parts and the pieces to make it happen.
Right.
But I was the legs for the records. You know, I was blessed to have the platform at St. Andrews and all the other spots to DJ in Detroit. And yeah, he would lace me. He'd give me beat tapes. He would give me the test presses as soon as he got them. And we were off to the races.
Right. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you mentioned the part about being able to hear a beat and kind of have it all together. And P-Rock said, you know, the dream and trying to scramble.
Right.
You'll soon find this. It's like when you go over to Royal Studios and talk to Boo, he's going to tell you about the drum machine before the I Can't Stand the Rain.
That
was a sound he had in his head.
Yeah. I've seen a few of the homies post videos over the years, and I'm grateful to join that club today.
Because that was a sound he came up with in his head, and he ended up creating that piece of equipment specifically to replicate it, because he tried bottles, he tried everything to figure out, like, this isn't what I heard in my head, this isn't what, and he made that
That's crazy.
Was an electronic kunga, if I'm not mistaken. It's like to do it. So yeah, look, just the interesting fact.
Absolutely.
I think that's a genius quality in a sense. So what do you think the world still hasn't fully understood about Dilla's impact on hip-hop and music in general?
I mean, like I said, you got Common Folk and you got the heads.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a lot of times with some of the greats that are not in the front of the crowd while they're here, it pops off when they leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating, you know, me being a champion and then just, you know, when he passes and everybody with their T-shirts, you know what I mean? And it's like he hasn't been here to see what he did.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It could be very frustrating. He's been gone almost 20 years and I still get emotional. You know what I mean?
Right.
I still get super emotional. You know what I mean?
Wow, it does not feel like 20 years. Wow.
It's 19 years on Monday.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember
it. I remember it like it was last night. You know what I mean? I was in New York. I went to New York for the Donuts release party with my brother Big Tone, and it was a great party.
Yeah.
Woke up the next morning. I already had a promo copy of the record at the crib in Detroit, but I was like, you know, I want to support the homie. So we go to Fat Beats and cop the record and hang out for a minute, and Fat Beats had this long, like, exorcist staircase. Go down to the staircase, and as soon as my foot hit the concrete, my phone rang. It was Wajid, and he was like, he's gone. And I was like, huh? What you mean? I went to see him in the hospital a year prior, and it just missed me when he said that.
Right.
And I said, what you talking about, bro? And his whole tone just got incredibly urgent, and he was like, shoes, he's gone. And me and Tone sat on that sidewalk in front of Fat Beats and cried like babies for about 45 minutes.
Right.
And I caught a plane, went to the funeral, and played the set of my life. Tarak, shout out to my brother Tarak, Lax. He was playing. They had a little get together at this spot called the Little Temple. And Yeah, I just remember being angry. I was really angry, and I drank a lot of Hennessy that night. And I walked up to the DJ, and I told him Jay wants me to play some records. And I don't remember anything after that.
Wow.
And I had homies from the crib. They said I was crying the whole time I was DJing. And I was actually at that time planning on moving to New York. Wajid was in New York. He's like, Shoes, you got to get out of the city. You got to come out. Spread your wings. Me and Wajid met up for lunch. And he was like, I know we was talking about that in New York.
Yeah.
But bro, L.A., like, you put it down last night. Like, all the illest DJs in the city were on the stage just watching.
Wow.
Yeah. I wish I could remember it.
Wow. And no, and it's crazy because no one got it on. Did anyone get it?
It was 19 years ago. It wasn't.
Yeah, true.
You know?
Yeah, Blackberries trying
right.
to.
Right. Right.
Poor video quality.
Right.
So, how has this influence shaped your own work as a DJ and a producer?
Just sticking to your guns. Not, once again, just not trying to fit in. If you try to fit in, you're never going to stand out. And not letting popularity infiltrate your taste.
Right.
You know, I don't read rooms. I get booked for a reason.
Right, right.
I get booked to play heat. I get booked to play records you never heard in your life. And that's never going to change. You know, someone's got to ride it out. A lot of people... just they lose their way.
Yeah.
And that's not possible over here. I'm sticking to the script.
Indeed. Indeed. And I love that. I love that. So we're going to talk a little bit of Detroit versus Memphis. You know, people have always tried to pin our cities against each other. And it's like.
Really?
Yeah, it's like the Stax versus the Motown.
I see what you're saying.
You know, right. and in reality, we are we're so much like sister cities. Instead of looking at each other as competition, we right. really accented each other because you got the yin and the yang. I always talk about the Great Migration specifically because my family lives Chicago, in Gary, Indiana, Detroit, and that Great Migration headed up 55. So we're all right. technically cousins. I feel like
it
all came from the same roots and we all came from the same influences and backgrounds, which is, you know, like as far as that Deep South. And then it migrating and kind of changing and evolving
right.
in a sense. But I've never seen it as like a, you know, a contrasting thing where it has to be compared. It's like,
yeah, people always want to pit people against each other. And
yeah.
I've never gotten into competition. We can all rock. We can all get down together. You know what I mean?
Right. And so I wanted to, I guess, talk about briefly, because, you know, we talked about the deep history beyond Motown. But I see a lot of parallels between the two cities as far as their contributions to music. And so I want to talk about that because I consider you a historian. Too. I know you love talking about music and, you know, right, outside right. of hip hop. So let's look at some of the parallels and the comparisons between the two cities beyond Stax, beyond Motown, as far as the development of the sound. I know we share a person, and the two cities fight over this too. Aretha Franklin, she was born here.
Oh, word.
But she didn't claim Memphis. She moved, right. you know, she claimed Detroit. That's how, so Memphians, we have to accept that.
Right.
We have to accept what Aretha wanted and not what we wanted.
True.
But again, it's that very similar sound. Do you see some of the comparisons, especially the usages in hip hop and sampling, and as far as taking from the different cities' musical legacy?
I mean, it's once again, it comes down to quality. You know what I mean? We're looking for them records, and y'all got them records, and we got them records. I would say, you know, I love Motown. I grew up with that in my blood, hearing it at home. But it's a little dirtier. I like a rougher edge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I might even, you know, sorry Detroit, I might side with y'all musically. You know. But the big thing is them smaller labels, them 7 inches, them one, not like the opposite of a one hit wonder.
Yeah.
Like a group that just had one record and it's the craziest record you ever heard. And it was pressed, you know, 65 years ago and there was 300 copies and it's $1,500 right. in 2025, you know, the obscure records. Because everybody knows the joints.
Right.
It's all about finding the other things. You know what I mean?
Right, right. So are there any music, Memphis artists or sounds that have resonated with you personally that you've listened to specifically?
I mean, I'm not going to front. I'm not, like, I am a historian of my city, but kind of more so in a modern sense.
Okay, yeah.
and I drank a lot throughout my career. Like, I quit. I haven't had any liquor or beer in 3 months. I'm cleaning Yay. My. I'm cleaning up. You know, I'm trying to refine myself. I'll be 50 in March, so I'm going to be able to absorb and keep memories, because it's right. so many things that I just don't remember. But I was just all about the record. I mean, even to this day, I got 10,000 records in my apartment, and probably 2/3 of them, I don't know the name of the song. I might not even know the name of the album.
Right.
But I know that second song on side B is the joint.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Right. So look, that as a DJ, of course, it's like, that's the easiest. I know which one.
Yeah, the funny thing is even if I don't know that, you know, I pull the record out and I look for the side with the fingerprints on it.
That makes so much sense. That makes so much sense. So what can Memphis expect from your set at Central Station tonight? I know today is Dilla Day.
Yeah, you happy, know, happy birthday,
a,
Jay.
Yeah, happy birthday. We've had, years ago, I know we've always had a semblance of a Dilla Day. I've been a huge fan since, you know, prior to his death, early Slum Village.
I mean, he created what your show is named after.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
That exactly. was an offshoot of his entire sound, Neo Soul.
Like, yeah.
Tonight's going to be a celebration. It was somebody that posted something in the comments on a post that I put up yesterday, and he was like, I'm trying to not cry today, Shoes. And I was like, bro, it's his birthday.
Yeah.
You can cry on Monday. You know, Monday is the day he passed. You know what I'm saying? But we're going to celebrate.
But we're celebrating.
We're celebrating. And I'm really excited. We got some young producers playing joints, and that's how I'm going to kind of segue into it. Dude posted yesterday on IG. He's like, they're playing beats. And I was like, you got me charged up. I think I'm going to play some beats too.
Yes.
So they're going to play their joints. Yes. I'm going to come on and play some House Shoes tracks. And I'll finish that portion up with some of the collaborations that me and Jay had. And then we'll open the door to Jay. And it's going to be samples. It's going to be, I got some treats in there. I got some rarities.
Awesome.
And we're definitely going to run through the classics, beat tape joints. Yeah. I'm really, you know, that I've been, you know, Shoes is the Dilla dude.
Yeah.
And I'm super grateful for it, but people want to pigeonhole you and think you can only do one thing.
Right. And you're an amazing producer, so we definitely want to hear, you know.
I've been itching to get back in, too. I haven't made a beat in 16 years.
Okay.
And that's the fun part about playing beats for people, because I ain't made a beat in 16 years, and Jay, it's got to be timeless every time.
Right.
When I was making beats in my youth, if it wasn't hot, turn it off, turn it back on. I'm not wasting a floppy on this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So shout out to Unapologetic. That's the crew that, you know, of course, is opening up for you tonight. You've been an outspoken advocate for authenticity in music. And what advice would you give to young DJs or producers trying to stay true to their craft?
It's cool to be influenced, but don't imitate. You know what I mean? It kind of made, like I said, I've cleaned my life up. I'm trying to be a nicer person.
Right.
But Jay didn't like that.
Right, right.
I mean, literally everybody's seen the interviews. Like, why does, you got to be, I like unicorns. That's what I'm a fan of. I'm a fan of singularities. And I got plenty of Dilla beats. I don't want to hear your Dilla beats.
Right.
Figure out what your sound is. We all are influenced in the beginning, you know? We all imitate in the beginning. But you have to find your sound, because what's the point in making some music that we've already had? You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. Exactly. What is the point?
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you a light question. Light question. So what's the one record or song that you never leave home without, that you feel like you always have to whip out of your arsenal?
Oh man, there's so many.
Light, slightly hard question. I know I answered one song.
On some Dilla or just in general?
Just in general, coming from the minor House Shoes.
Oh man. Currently, in the last couple of years, Can I Call You Rose?
I love that song.
That's my joint.
Yeah.
But all time, Mecca and the Soul Brother, Pete Rock.
Oh.
Like, that album raised musicality in hip hop by so many levels. Yeah, you know, Pete was one of Jay's primary influences.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to grow up and like have all the gods numbers in your phone book, you know, like,
right,
to be able to talk to Q-Tip on the phone, like, blows my mind. Like, Tip calls me Big Bro, and I still haven't figured out why.
Like, how did that happen?
I'll take it. You know what I mean? Mecca the Soul Brother. I like the grimy side too. Rock Marciano. Rock's manager just sent me a joint this morning. I guess him and Primo are doing an album, and he sent me the first joint, and I was very impressed. What's the one though? The one. I mean, Welcome to Detroit. Never leave. Mobb Deep the Infamous. Never leaves my car.
Yeah.
For the last 25, 30 years. You know what I mean? Welcome to Detroit. You know, God bless Donuts. But if you say Donuts is your favorite Dilla album, you probably weren't listening until he was dead.
True.
You know what I mean?
True. That's very true. I will say that. That's, you know, it was crazy. Dilla used to release these random vinyls. You know, in Memphis, we were a little bit separate from it. You know, of course, coming, you know. The type of hip hop we have here, we were kind of like the beatniks or the hip hop heads, because we gathered at this place called Precious Cargo. And so it's like they used to have hip hop night on Thursdays. And so the guys used to get these random mixes, and it'd be like volume one, volume whatever.
Right.
And it's this one, and I'm going to have to pull a Al Bundy and hum it to you once we get off air, because now I need to, I was like, maybe he'll know what song this is.
Right.
I've been, like 30 years, it feels like I've been trying to figure out what song this is.
Right. Right.
But that's one of the things that I loved about that particular scene, because like I said, I was a part of like the hip hop heads that kind of listened to what was considered in the late 90s, you know, abstract hip hop music, and especially gathering in those spaces, gathering in Memphis and trying to put those, you know, two and two together. There's a particular artist that that worked with Pete that I wished could have had the opportunity to work with Dilla, because I felt like they would have jailed. It's an artist by the name of Mono Neon. That's from here.
He's from here.
Musical genius. He's had a bass in his hand since he was four.
His dad,
you know, is a funk bassist, and you know, has always been a musical genius. But it's crazy because even watching him as a kid, like, it was something that we had always said to ourselves, just like,
he's special.
He's special.
Yeah.
Like what you all said about Dylan, watching him grow up,
right,
and you know, as far as the musicality, because he's a great musician, you know, so many things, you know, in that package. And so we have like I said, I just wish they had the opportunity, and they cross paths so much. He plays with Pete Rock now.
Yep.
He's played with, you know, Prince and so many others.
Right.
And he's played around with a lot of Dilla beats and stuff online.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's like, but yeah, so hopefully, I don't know if I think he's on tour, but I wish he was in town to meet you and everything
That'd be great.
So last question. Last, we're going to make this one a fun one. If you could work with any artist, dead or alive,
right,
who would it be?
Oof.
I say these are easy questions. These are not easy questions.
I mean,
I see the wheels turning in your
keep
head.
It on, to keep, to be honest with you, JD.
Yeah.
Like, it's mind-boggling. His professional career was 12 years long.
Mm.
He's been gone for 19 years. What would he sound like today? There's no way to wrap your head around that.
That's,
you know what
true.
I mean? There's no, like, what would he sound like today?
That's true.
It's so frustrating. Like, I'm so grateful to have been in the position I was in and to contribute to his growth. You know what I mean? I always used to say he was 10 years ahead.
Yeah.
He's been gone almost 20 years, and nobody has topped it. It's frustrating.
Right.
Like, the ceiling for me is so high. I'm unimpressed.
Right.
With so many talented producers, just because I was next to the God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I could work with anybody, it'd be Jay.
That's a great answer. Great answer.
Yeah.
So, what do you have coming up new? I know, of course, you're here in Memphis DJing, but, you know, House Shoes, the producer. You said that you know, kind of getting back into beats. So
I've been itching. I'm not going to front. I'm going to be picking up. I got like 5 NPCs.
Oh, wow.
Just with dust on them. You know what I mean? But I'm picking up my 3000 from the homie Ken in the next few weeks, and we're going to get back into it.
Okay.
I never created with any intention or purpose other than therapy. I like chopping up records. I like chopping up drum breaks. I'm not going to be on software. I'm going to do it just like I did it the whole time. You know what I mean? Outside of that, just continuing this refinement, you know, getting myself together.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the best where it is. So looking forward to it. Definitely going to keep up with you and see this newness. Because like I said, I'm going to hold you to it.
Absolutely. I got to send you the catalog too, the Street Corner catalog.
Please,
you know,
do.
I had a label. It's kind of, that's on hiatus because I'm just not impressed. The last person that really stirred something up in me was Soundtrack. And that was like 5 years ago. And it's no slight against anybody. It's just I have very high standards. And I can't shift them standards. Like, nah, can't do it. So.
And that's the thing about working with the best. You know, it's just, it shifts your standards.
Quality
it sets
control
the
is
bar.
So important. Yeah. I mean, but I'm grateful. I got to put out 85 records in 10 years.
Wow.
My whole goal was always just, and just new artists. I just want to give a kid his first record.
Yeah.
Because it's really crazy how many incredibly talented creatives have devastating self-image and confidence issues. So, and I put all the records together for the most part. It's not like I take solicited projects.
You know?
You start sending folders. I pick the joints. I sequence the joints. And that, I get an idea for artwork. Like, very heavy-handed on the records.
Right.
And, you know, pat them on the back and send them on their way. If they want to do another one, we can do another one. I'm like the starting point, not the finish line. The starting line is so much more important than the finish line.
Indeed.
Because so many people overthink everything and never cross the starting line. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that would be my biggest advice to any creative is start.
Yeah, just like, get on the block.
Get in the room and press play with people. You know, put your music out there. Get a band camp. You know, I've been Tall Black Guy. He does the Music Mondays because I cut into him last year. Like, bro. I've had that template. I've been telling people that for like 3 or 4 years. Every Monday, drop a joint, make it private the next Monday, and you're casually building albums.
Right.
You know, passively in a year, that's like 4 projects.
Right, right.
And when you wake up on a Monday morning, don't think too much about it. Just
put it
go
out
through
there.
The folders, find a joint, put it up, and let it live. Because, you know, God forbid something happens. None of us are guaranteed tomorrow.
Right.
And if you go away, all that music goes away too.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. So wise words from how she put it up and let it live.
Yeah,
there it
absolutely.
Is. So thank you so much.
No,
you
thank
will be
you.
Here at Central Station right here in Memphis, Tennessee later on tonight for Dilla Day. Opening up with, of course, Unapologetic. Shout out to the local crew. And looking forward to just seeing what you pull out of your coffer tonight. I already know it's going to be some bangers, and
absolutely.
Instead of just ready, you know, this is my New Year's Eve for me, celebrating my birthday as well. So I'll definitely be in there twirling and you know dancing along with the music. So again, thank you so much for
thank you
tuning
big,
in.
Big love to Memphis. I appreciate y'all. You know what I mean?
Thank you. So you have been tuned in to Welcome to Neo Soulville with me, Tanya Dyson, here on WYXR 91.7 FM. If you've missed any part of this interview, you can go back to the website. Visit WYXR.org, click on shows and archives, scroll down and find Welcome to Neo Soulville, and from there you can listen to this show and so many others. And while you're on the website, go ahead and hit that donate button, because we are a nonprofit community-run radio station powered by listeners like you. So we're going to keep this thing going right on along. I'll bring it back with a little bit of Memphis. Here's a little bit of Isaac Hayes, Hung Up on My Baby.